This is Words of the Woods, a podcast from the Lake County Forest Preserves in Libertyville, Illinois. I'm Brett Pito. A quick safety note for those wondering. To maintain social distancing, we recorded all Season 2 episodes remotely. Thanks for doing your part to help keep the preserves open for all to enjoy by following social distancing guidelines. Nature is one of the best classrooms around. Study after study shows that time spent outdoors learning about nature fosters a child's healthy development. It helps kids manage stress and become more resilient. Nature stimulates their imaginations too, and group activities improve social skills. Alyssa Furcus, education manager, and Jenny Sazama, environmental educator too, have seen these positive effects firsthand, time and time again. They're here to share how they like to connect kids with nature, and how nature connects with kids, sometimes when many other things don't. Alyssa and Jenny, so glad you could be here today.
Excited to be here, Brett. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation.
So I'd like to start with kind of a basic definition, which is, what is environmental education, or EE as we abbreviate it?
Well, Brett, environmental education helps individuals learn more about the environment. And we hope to develop skills and an understanding to help address big global questions and concerns.
I would agree with that. It's a learning process that really increases people's knowledge and awareness about the environment.
Yeah, the whole goal is to create a positive connection with the person and the environment.
What are the daily responsibilities of an environmental educator? Jenny, do you want to start?
Sure, I'll start. I was laughing because I put a little note here, refer to my job description. And really the top thing in our job description as environmental educators with the Lake County Forest Preserves is to propose, create, and present environmental education programs. But it's also to interpret natural history and to participate in defining the goals of our education department and where we want to go. So that is on the professional level. On a personal level, as an environmental educator, I feel like it's my responsibility to be able to educate the public about the environment and their connection to it and how what they do every day impacts what's going on in our environment.
Yeah, I would agree with Jenny. As an environmental educator, my goal isn't necessarily to convince the public that one decision is better than the other, but to give learners the tools and the skills needed to make their own decisions.
On average, how many people does our education department serve per year, and what age ranges do we serve?
Yeah, great question. In 2019, the education department served 76,000 people, and two-thirds of these people were reached through programming. And the age varies. We see in programming, we see toddlers to seniors, but the Dunn Museum and the Welcome Center invites infants all the way to seniors. So really all ages.
What different types of education opportunities do we offer? You've mentioned programming. Are there any other resources available for the public?
Where to start, Jenny? Do you want to start that one? There's a long list.
Oh my gosh. I know. It's a diverse range of activities. Some are self-guided, whether it's non-personal education. So like if you go to a forest preserve and you see a sign that talks about the history of that preserve or anything about it, that's an educational opportunity. Besides, you know, school programs, we do scout badges, we have summer day camps, we do events. Lately, we've been doing a lot more virtual experiences and educational opportunities. So it's just a wide range. What else? Oh, yeah, boat-based programs. So we have a fleet of canoes and kayaks that we would use to get folks out closer to nature and experience it in a different way. What else, Alyssa? It's a big list.
Yeah, family programming, a bunch of different types of public programming, and those usually vary seasonally. So one season we may talk all about birds when the birds are migrating through, and in summer we might focus a lot on summer insects or on paddling programs and opportunities or lake ecology. It really depends on the season, but we offer programs for a lot of different audiences.
So we've touched on this, but it strikes me that there are so many shapes that EE could take or can take. I myself have listened to presentations, visited preserves in person with an educator, met education animals, and even watched funny nature-themed skits at our annual Halloween Hikes program. Why do we offer this type of content in such a wide variety of forms?
Well, Brett, our community is diverse, so our programming should be too. And I think that EE is a diverse discipline, and just like the communities that we live in, and we involve many different disciplines from interpretation and a wildlife education to hands-on experimental learning. There are so many great ways to make learning fun in these incredible natural spaces. So let's take advantage of all of those.
You know, what comes to mind is, why do we offer such a diverse range of programming? It's because we have, just like Alyssa said, a diverse range of audiences and interests and backgrounds that people bring to our programs. And so we try to make sure we have a little bit of something for everyone. And it's never done. It's always, we're always looking to be more inclusive and progressive in how we provide our programming and see what our community needs. And now, because of this COVID-19 and social distancing, our community is beyond the Lake County borders, and it is worldwide. So that's really exciting and new for us. And it's something that we have to really come together as a team and think, wow, how do we reach this group of even broader audience with the technologies we have? So it's an exciting time. I mean, I'm sure we may talk about this a little bit later, but it's exciting to do virtual programming, learn different ways to do it. But at the same time, you know, we really miss me being out in our preserves as well and engaging with people right there.
Just like Jenny said, it's, our communities are changing. Yes, we have a further reach right now because we're virtual, but even our Lake County communities are constantly changing. And so it's up to us as environmental educators to really keep up with those changing populations to make sure that we're reaching their needs.
At the top of the show, I said nature is one of the best classrooms around. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. However, I may be biased a little bit, Brett, because nature is my classroom.
I personally, as a mother of a toddler, I see such positive impacts from taking my own child outside that I just can't ignore those benefits. A couple hours outside a day really increases his energy levels, his positivity, and he sleeps better. And those are just my personal, my personal experiences with my own son. But as an environmental educator, I've seen this play out in audiences from seniors to young toddlers, and just the benefits of being outdoors.
I'd like to focus on one of our primary audiences for EE, which is children, as we've mentioned. Why are children a primary audience for us?
I always say get them when they're young, right? We want to instill an awareness and sense of wonder when they're young, and that likely creates a lifelong interest in nature and support for the environment. And I really strongly believe that if we don't have a strong environment, we have nothing else strong in our world. I mean, everyone needs fresh air and clean water and healthy soils. And so if we get start them when they're really young, they build that appreciation into adulthood and carry it with them. And then they can be better stewards and be just really environmentally conscious. So that's on, like, get them when they're little, have some fun out there, and just have built some really positive emotional connections to nature.
Yeah, I agree with Jenny. I think that today's children are going to be tomorrow's governors and world leaders. And so it's really important to equip them with the skills to make these important decisions. But not just that benefit to the environment, it's such a benefit for their children as well. And there's been so many studies that show that time outside reduces stress, reduces anxiety, reduces blood pressure, can be the prescription for obesity and ADHD and a lot of things that young children struggle with.
It's not just knowing about natural history as an environmental educator. We have to know a lot about child psychology and child behaviors, because that really helps us develop our programmings, whether they're really structured or unstructured, to provide a wonderful learning environment for all these kids who Some are really scared of nature coming right out. Some actually just jump right in, and just giving them a really safe, comfortable place to explore and learn.
Yeah, I think Jenny's absolutely right. I think it's the job of the environmental educators to use these different passions, interests, and learning styles to our advantage, to give them the tools to help them inspire them and to reach the diverse learners that we work with.
What are some of the different learning styles that you encounter?
Well, we have children and adults, including myself, who are just doers. We want to just jump right in and experience it, get muddy and get dirty and just have a good time. And then there are some that just kind of sit back and observe and maybe eventually join in. And just some just like to listen quietly. Some like to touch things, and they're very tactile. So that's some different learning styles. Or just getting comfortable with a insect crawling on their leg or on their arm is just a new experience. We also have education animals that, you know, might be a little new for folks, like snakes and turtles and, you know, salamanders and toads. But we try to, you know, engage children with those as well. And some really get into it and some are like, mm-mm. But I also, what comes to mind is our maple syrup program that we do. And some of the kids are just like, oh no, I don't want to, there's no way I'm going to try this syrup that comes out of a tree. But so they're engaging that sense as well. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. And Jenny hit on some of those different learning styles, but different age ranges even come with different milestones. And so every program that we develop is developed with specific objectives that are geared towards these unique learners within every age range to hit every single one of these milestones. And that way a child can come to our program every year, like maple syrup, and they're focused on a topic, but they have a different experience each time that they come back.
Right. We really take into consideration their cognitive, emotional, and physical abilities at that age level, and we tailor our programs to hit those abilities.
Have you ever encountered a situation where nature, whether it be plants, animals, scenic landscapes, fresh air, or sunshine, connected with a child better than other approaches? Essentially, when nature seemed to be the exact thing a child needed to experience in that place at that time?
Yes. Oftentimes, you'll see a child that goes in nature, either maybe for the first time and is exploring it through a different lens, and they might have these aha moments, and you see it in their face, and you see them light up. I usually call this the spark, and this might create a new love for them down the road and a new trajectory. They might be obsessed with birds and birding or fly fishing or whatever that topic may be, that or that one thing that sparked them, but you can definitely see it. And that's why environmental educators go into this field, is because of those aha moments and those sparks that happen in people. It really makes our job worthwhile.
Yeah, it sure does. And it's funny because I also call them spark moments. I call them like it's a light bulb and you can see it. It's a physical transformation, Brett. It's amazing. And you see when a person can connect with the resource in a meaningful way. And sometimes these sparks can be life-changing. You know, I had a letter written to me by a camper years ago at a residential camp that came to us, and he wrote a letter to me and he said that he absolutely loved being out there in the program that he learned, and that he wanted to become an environmental educator because of his experiences while there. And so I've seen it with seasonals that come in with us, where they maybe come in from a classroom teaching background, a formal education, and they do a season with us in the summer, and then they change their career path and they become environmental educators, which can be kind of tough. You know, you got to do a lot of seasonal jobs with not a lot of pay, but there are definitely trade-offs for that. But yeah, some people just learn better in a natural environment where it's a little less structured.
Yeah, I've seen many cases of students who apply for maybe a week-long field kayaking program. And if you looked at their grades and their scores, you would say how they did in a formal classroom. and then you saw how they did in this informal setting, it's not the same. Some students that really struggle in that formal classroom excel in nature and excel in the informal classroom. And so I think that I've watched students who have really been close to dropping out of high school and have really struggled, spend a week or a month on a field program with me and change their entire life.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has a huge impact on youth at risk, whether they're struggling in school or struggling at home, being outdoors in a way where it causes them to grow skills or develop skills that maybe they didn't realize they have, and that builds their confidence and it builds their just their belief in themselves. And it is very much life changing.
What about nature do you think makes it connect so well in many cases, like the ones you just mentioned?
The first thing that came to mind to me is it's just not judgmental. You know, everywhere you are in society, sometimes there's messages being tossed at you, and you go out in nature and it becomes what you need it to be for you. And it engages you on multiple levels of your senses, and it's less structured. It's more relaxed. And so that's why I think it connects with so many different people, because people go out and get from it what they need. And what my needs might be different than Alyssa's needs and are different than your needs, Brett, when you go out.
Yeah, it's not a textbook. It doesn't have a front cover. It doesn't have a back cover. It's awe-inspiring. It's never ending. It covers a mass majority of the planet, and it never gets boring. There's so many aspects of nature that can't be explained, and you have to have a personal experience with that to be able to explain it. And just like Jenny said, it's not a place where you're judged. It's a judge-free zone.
Do you notice a difference in a child's nature, knowledge base, or other skills after a program? And if so, is the effect more pronounced after a week of summer camp versus an hour-long program? I'm sure there are probably exceptions to the rule or exceptions to the pattern, but just wanted to get your thoughts.
For one, all of our environmental education programs include cognitive objectives. So we have built-in moments in the program outlines where we're checking the child's knowledge of what we're teaching. I mean, that's part of being an educator, is that you have to check to just see, are they learning what we're wanting them to learn? But also, I just said, when you said, does it have a different impact? It just really depends on the children's interests, the educator's techniques, the environment that you're in. Especially if kids are coming out and they're coming for a required school program and it's raining and it's cold and they wore shorts. So that kind of doesn't help a lot with the learning process. Most importantly, really, it's the educator's passion when they're talking about that topic, no matter what the audience, that effect is going to be contagious. And you can reflect back to when you were in school and maybe you had a teacher that you really liked or a subject you really liked. Think about on that and reflect on it. And a lot of it has to do with their enthusiasm.
Yeah, Jenny hits on some really good points. She talks about the fact that passion and the way that that person experiences that particular day is really impactful. But not just that, I've seen that spark or that aha moment happen after a 30-minute program. And for the most case, though, I usually do see that longer programs form deeper connections and provide more opportunities for that spark. But I have talked to teachers. Recently, we did a focus group with some teachers, and two of the four teachers that we asked what was their favorite field trip that they can remember as a child. Two of the four educators that we talked to, teachers, said that a trip to the Forest Preserve for a school program was their highlight. And that was the one field trip that they remembered as a child. So that tells you that even those maybe 30 to 60 minute field trips that they are taking, they have the potential. If everything goes right, if the educator is passionate and they wore the right clothes and, you know, they didn't get bit by mosquitoes and everything went positively, it really could be formative for their whole life.
For any parents or guardians listening to this, what's one way they could help their child connect better to nature today?
I always say, go outside without a plan. Don't worry about your kids getting dirty or messy. Let them let loose and have fun. and help them to get excited about nature, even if it's something in your own backyard or something that you think is really small. Really build that up. Like Jenny said, passion of the educator, passion of that parent. That's where kids model their behaviors. If they see their parent or their guardian really scared of bees or really scared of going outside, they too will maybe form that fear. And so it's our responsibility to kind of change that and get them excited about even the smallest things.
Right. That's why I think if you have a parent or an adult guardian who isn't so comfortable with the outdoors, just get your child involved with environmental education programs somewhere. And that way you have folks who are really comfortable out there who can guide the child into some of those experiences. But also we do adult and child programs so we can guide the adult as well. But I would agree, just allow the time to explore outdoors and encourage them to ask questions and wonder how they're connected to the world. Just take in that time that's unstructured for them to explore and engage with their own senses and their own ideas and their own creativity is the way to do that. Get them connected. Just get them out there. Put them outside. Like my grandma would say, go play in the woods, kids.
Something we've learned from the coronavirus pandemic, if we didn't know it already, is that the earth is essential. Nature is essential. The preserves never closed. They've stayed open up to the time of this recording. In turn, it makes sense that learning about nature and the earth is essential. What are the benefits of EE? We've touched on a few of them, but if you could consolidate them into one place for me.
Yeah, Brett, I think you just hit on one. I think nature knowledge, learning about nature so that you can be a steward for the environment, so that you can make good environmental decisions. That's our responsibility as a resident of this world. And we have to learn about what we want to protect.
Oh my gosh, I know. I was sitting here thinking, oh, good. Yeah. There's so much you could add. How to be concise about it. Nature inspires, and teaching, if you're not aware of the wonders, then why would you want to protect it or support it in any way? And so that's why, again, it's so important that we introduce our young children to the wonders of our natural world and their connections to it, so they can understand it and know how they are connected, not only locally, but regionally and globally. That we all live in this one world, and it's the only one we have. And so it's important that we protect it in any way that we can. And having that like science behind it is really important as well, so they can understand it that way, and how their impacts on it can be negative or positive, but they have the choice and they can change the kind of impact they have in the world.
Yeah. A lot of life skills, like your social skills, learning to be independent, learning to be resilient. You can find examples of this by going into nature. You can find tons of examples of these just by going into nature.
What does the current scientific literature tell us about the benefits of time spent outdoors, and EE specifically, for a child's well-being? And are there any studies that stand out in particular?
You know, one formative book for me, and it's not necessarily a study, but he does refer to many different studies in the book, was Richard Louv's Last Child in the Woods. And it's all about saving our children from nature deficit disorder. And I read this when I was in grad school, and it really resonated with me. It talked all about this time where people are a wired generation and the effects of that wired generation and how we can reconnect to nature and the importance of it. And he refers to many different studies and benefits, a lot of which we've already kind of discussed, but it really was a formative book for me.
I would agree. And he's written two others now, The Nature Principle, which kind of helps a little bit more for adults, and then Vitamin N. Obviously, N would be standing for nature. And that gives hundreds of ideas of what parents can do with their children outdoors, because it just is, it's an overall booster for your immune system. There are phytoncides, which are put out by plants. It's a chemical that puts up by plants that helps protect them from kind of forest insects and things. And scientists have realized that we actually benefit from those, and all the fun little like, oh, don't get dirty, get dirty, because there's healthy bacteria and things in that dirt that will help your immune system as well and develop that. But as we've talked about before, reducing stress, anxiety, putting a boost back in your focus can help you sleep better, especially if you go camping for a weekend. It'll improve your circadian rhythm. So we're biological beings. And so our rhythms follow the sunlight in the world. And speaking of sunlight, vitamin D is good. So getting outside for at least 15, 20 minutes helps that as well. So it's healthy for your body. It's healthy for your mind. And then when you're learning about it as well, that helps you become that steward later on in life.
Yeah. And I like a lot of the studies that are around. Not only do they raise the alarm of some of these things that are happening if you're disconnected to nature, but it gives you practical solutions of how to find that connection, how to reconnect.
Right. There are studies go ahead, Brett. I'm going to say that there are studies that have shown an ecotherapy, which is connecting with nature, is as effective as traditional psychotherapy or medication. And for some people, it is just being out in nature, just boosts their mental health. And when you're happy, other things in your life tend to also be in a better place.
As an organization, the Forest Preserves firmly believes nature is for everyone. So at the same time that we recognize the importance and benefits of EE, we need to ensure access is provided to children and adults across Lake County, regardless of background. In what ways are we working to expand access to our education opportunities? And what else is planned for the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. As I mentioned before, always, all of our education programs are designed with inclusion in mind from beginning to end. So that's the bare minimum. As a public government organization, we are subsidized by taxpayers, which means that a lot of our programs are affordable for many. And when they're not affordable to many, we do have grants available, like Gateway grants for schools that qualify. We do offer scholarships for camps. But if you look comparatively to our prices versus a lot of our other prices, we really do come in as the most affordable. Other things that we're trying to do is we always try to tailor the needs of the audience for the program. So if somebody has physical needs, special physical needs, social or emotional needs, we do try to accommodate all of those. We do have amazing landscape architects that are constantly looking at the designs of our trails. And we have a great public affairs team that are always looking at signage. We're always trying to find ways to reach people of all abilities.
Jenny, would you mind telling me about two or three of your favorite tried and true education techniques?
I can't give away my secrets, Brett. Just kidding. Well, I find that using a multi-sensory approach that uses universal concepts, so themes that everyone can understand, along with making the information relevant to the audience, works really well, is an effective way to reach a wide variety of people. But again, you've heard me talk about passion. You have to be passionate about what you are teaching, because that just really, it just resonates through you. And I also think about Gardner's multiple intelligences, which his theory is connected to multisensory learning, and that children learn better with activities that involve more than one sense. And nature provides that in so many ways just naturally that we just kind of help guide them along. So that's what I think about when I'm teaching. It's like, how do I make it relevant? And how can I engage more than one sense And how can I include concepts that most people, no matter their backgrounds or their experiences, can relate to and understand? So there's my secret. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Well, you know, I think Jenny hit the nail on the head. I think it's so important that you actually love what you're teaching about, that you genuinely care about what you're teaching about, and that you're excited and you're passionate. There's been a lot of studies that have shown that if your instructor is passionate and enthusiastic and really loves what they're doing, that will transcribe to that, that'll transfer to that audience. When I teach, I aim to always have a structure. I always have an outline that I hope to follow. But I think that one of the most important things is that I'm always open to new things. If a red-tailed hawk flies over my head during the middle of a program, I'm not going to stick to my structured outline to make sure that you see what I'm talking about. I'm going to stop and I'm going to have everybody look up and see that red-tailed hawk and take that and, you know, capitalize on that moment. And that might be the aha moment for a lot of those learners.
Yeah. And then what's kind of fun for us as educators is to take that moment that interrupts your structured outline and try to transition or apply it. Like, how do we relate this somehow? That's kind of fun. I don't know. It's fun for me. I don't know if that's fun for Alyssa, but I always find that it's tricky. Like, how do I relate that, this red-tailed hawk, to, you know, plant life cycles, you know, or something like that. But we make it work. It's fun.
Would you call that a teachable moment?
Yes. Yes. And I've had so many memorable teachable moments in my career that have stood out. There's been one. I worked on a small cruise line in Alaska as an exploration guide. And it was I used to do an hour-long nighttime program on a natural history topic of choice. And that night was all about bears. And so I'm on the deck doing a discussion about the difference between brown bears and black bears. And I'm talking to the whole group. And all of a sudden, maybe 50 yards from us, we just start to see all these different bubbles coming up on the surface. And I immediately had a feeling that it was a unique behavior called bubble net feeding that humpback whales do. So we all got up immediately, left every discussion of brown bears and black bears, and went to the deck to watch these bubbles come up. And when the humpback whales came out of the water with their mouths open, it was a game stopper. I mean, nobody probably could even tell you the topic that we were discussing that night, because it was now all about that moment.
Do you have any memories of an experience like that from your career, Jenny?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of them, but one came to mind that I wanted to share, which is teachable moments aren't just opportunities to share information about nature. They often do, like an animal pops in or something happens, but there can also be moments when you demonstrate life skills, for example, like accepting another person's perspective without compromising your own. And what stands out to me is this poison ivy incident in a summer camp with six-year-olds. And so I just taught a lesson about poison ivy, how to identify it, what are the benefits, you know, and then we're going to go on a walk to go find poison ivy and imposters, plants that look like poison ivy. And I hear these two six-year-olds arguing, like really, they're about ready to toss down, is what it seemed like. So I went over there, and what it was about is their own experiences. One of the campers was totally supporting, on board. Poison ivy is awesome. It benefits this, this, and this. And the other child was saying, it's terrible. It made my mom and dad really sick, because they had, what happened was this child's parents were trying to remove it, not knowing what it was, and hand pulled it out of the ground and then burned it. And that is a terrible thing to do, because that the oils from that plant gets all over your skin. And then if you inhale, it can get in your lungs. And so his experience with poison ivy was a very negative, hurts his parents, his protectors, you know, and this other child's like, no, poison ivy is good. And so getting down at their level just explained to him that it's okay that this child's experiences are this, and this is how he feels about poison ivy. And it's okay if you think poison ivy is a really cool plant. They're both okay perspectives. And so how about we just go out and see if we can find some so we make sure we know what it looks like, and you can go home and tell mom and dad what poison ivy looks like and what it doesn't look like. And so that to me was a wonderful, teachable moment. I hope those children, you know, listening beyond that camp, I don't know, hopefully that's a life lesson for them and they walked away with that. But wow, it was changing for me, but definitely was an interesting, teachable moment.
Due to the pandemic, we, and here I'm speaking in the royal we, have shifted all of our programs online for the majority of 2020. What has that process been like? And have we ever done anything like this before?
You know, this has been a really challenging process overall. As environmental educators, our goal is to get people outside and to be outside. That's where we're most comfortable. And so when this pandemic hit, it kind of threw us all for a loop and try to figure out where to ground and how to best serve our community in the most responsible way. And I have to say, even though we offer a wide variety of digital and virtual programming, even though people are connecting digitally, our main goal is still to get them outside and to inspire them to find a connection outdoors. So even though they're connecting through a virtual platform, it doesn't take what our main objective still is, which is forming that strong connection.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, having stayed connected with the community of interpretation and environmental educators at the Lake County Forest Preserve, we have been very fortunate that we as educators have been able to do our primary function, which is to provide that service of education opportunities. And so in this time, it's really been a learning process. I know Alyssa said it's been challenging. It has. We've had to learn different platforms. We're using a lot of different devices now to get our messages out there. And we just got our smartphones last spring, and we got our iPads recently as well. So we're learning all the different kind of features we can use with that. We're brainstorming a lot and applying techniques so we can try to interact with our audiences virtually, because they've been, from what we've heard, getting feedback from our Forest Preserve users, they have been very thankful that the Forest Preserve stayed open this entire time so they could get out there and enjoy nature. And so being able to still provide educational opportunities for our community has been really a blessing. And then, have we done anything like this before? I'd say beyond interviews and TV journalists and maybe pre-recorded videos, nope. It's a whole new world out there for us.
And I feel like we talked about it as a department of wanting to eventually build out virtual programming one day, but that was never something that was the number one priority. We never really got to it. And so we're kind of looking at this as an opportunity to be able to do something that we've thought about doing for a while, just never had the opportunity to actually do.
Yeah, Brett, you were asking about highlights. And I would say, since we started doing virtual programs, I think what's been interesting to me is really just seeing students and children reaching out to us from their homes and seeing what that kind of experience is like. And then oftentimes there's a grandparent or a parent or a sibling in the background kind of joining in on the lesson, which is, you know, kind of a bonus because they're reaching out to even more. But that's kind of been a highlight for me. And just, hey, how do we take what we do and transform it into a digital way? And I think that's something I see for our future as environmental educators is continuing with virtual programming, even when it's safe to return to do in-person programs, that we will still have a mix of those programs. And Alyssa can speak to that more since she's the manager. Maybe she sees that too.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that virtual programming is not going away. Even if this virus gets under control and we're given the go to go back in the preserves and do in-person programming, just like Jenny said, virtual programming still will be there. It'll be a hybrid. It'll be part of our offerings from now on.
Are there any unique access limitations for virtual versus in-person programs?
with virtual programming, we are assuming that people have access to the internet. They have access to a computer or a smartphone. And that is not always the case. And so like we are looking into ways to connect with people in different ways that doesn't involve in-person to person contact, but it's still a way that they will receive some education, some services for what they're doing.
I know that, Brett, one of the audiences that I've noticed we're not reaching as well virtually is our younger age, like the toddler age, pre-K. And I've often done the hike and text programs. And I just, and you know, parents, they may want to limit their screen time with the young ones. And so now it's just, what can we do for it to reach out that audience so they feel like they're still getting the educational support that they need from us without it being on a screen? And so that's something I'll be looking into. Actually, it started today and we'll be moving forward with this fall. So it keeps us busy. But the advantage is we get to reach new audiences that maybe wouldn't have reached before. And when you're in a virtual setting, and disadvantages are you don't have that in-person engagement. I mean, you still can see nonverbal cues if it's a visual program, but if sometimes you're doing a webinar and you don't see your audience, you're not quite sure how they're reacting or what kind of impact you're having on them with your education. So that can be a little bit of a disadvantage.
Yeah, and as Jenny said it, we actually had our first international camper this past summer who joined for one of our fish camps from Canada. So that was a kind of a unique thing that this individual probably wouldn't have come all the way to Lake County for fish camp. And so we were able to reach a different audience. We also saw a lot of people from Cook County and the city of Chicago that may not have been able to come up to experience the in-person programming as well.
Are you eager to return safely, of course, to in-person programs?
Yes.
Yes, please.
And as soon as it's safe and responsible to do so, we will return.
What first inspired you to pursue a career in environmental education? Was there a particular moment or experience that drove it?
Well, I grew up in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, so was exposed to exploring nature experientially at a very young age. I mean, my swimming lessons were in a lake in the Northwoods, not a pool, to give you an example. But my final year of college, I knew that I wanted to do something outdoors, but I wasn't sure what it could be. And I got an internship with our neighbors to the west, the McHenry County Conservation District. And my very first program I ever did was maple syrup. And they still do that festival, the sugar maples. And to me, that was it. I was hooked. I'm like, what? You can go out and hike and do things in nature and it's a job? This is so cool. So I sought out opportunities in the environmental education profession ever since. So that's how I got involved in environmental ed. It's just been a wonderful, wonderful time. And it's still wonderful because you just keep learning.
Yeah, similar to Jenny, I've always loved the outdoors. I've always really loved animals. I studied science as an undergrad and got my degree in biology. And I took a job inside a research lab outside of Palo Alto, California. And I would spend about 10 hours a day in this research lab. And I couldn't stand being inside. I couldn't wait to get outside, I should say. I couldn't wait for the moment when I could go for a walk and get some fresh air. And I realized I did love science and I definitely have a lot of respect for research, but it just wasn't for me. So after 6 months of working in the lab, I picked up and I took a job at the Delaware State Parks as a naturalist at a zoo. And it was a 9-month position and I drove cross country and I started that job. And after the first week of that job, just watching the aha moments and the sparks and watching my inspiring coworkers and managers and how much they loved animals in the outdoors and how much they strive to form that connection with people, I decided this was for me. And so after that position, I went back to grad school and I I went to get my master's in environmental ed because I had that strong science background, but I didn't have that teaching background yet. And so I wanted to fine tune those teaching skills. And so from there, I never went back. And, you know, like Jenny says, it's been such a wonderful road. So many doors and opportunities have opened and have allowed for some wonderful experiences. And I hope that I've inspired at least one or two people to fall in love with nature.
So we've talked a lot about all the education programs that we offer today. How can our listeners actually participate in one of those programs?
Yeah, well, Brett, they can start by visiting our website, which is www.lcfpd.org, and looking at the calendar. We do have our programs up there for 2 to 3 months in advance. And if there's a topic that piques their interest, I would highly encourage them to register for that topic and see what it has to offer. And hopefully that will open the doors to lots of different other programs that they'll want to participate in.
Right. And another place on our website to go to is our education tab. It'll drop down a menu and you can choose a variety of different things, which is where people can find out more about us. And then I think it's great that we've launched that Ask an Educator email. So if you have any questions about things, or maybe you have a program suggestion that you want to see us do in the future, you can just send it to askaneducator@lcfpd.org. So I think that's pretty cool. That's a way we can reach out and engage with our audience virtually since we're not able to be out there in person.
If there's one parting piece of wisdom or advice you could share with our listeners, what might that be?
You know, don't stop adventuring and exploring. I feel like you don't need to live by the ocean or live on a mountain to have adventure. If you just open your eyes, there's everyday adventures in your own backyard. And I can't tell you how much I look forward to those everyday adventures.
Yeah, we align a lot in this podcast, Alyssa, because my comment is never stop exploring and learning. But then I also thought about it a little bit more, like when you become an adult, stay environmentally conscious and be involved politically so our environmental resources are protected and our environmental education still exists. So that's what I'd say as a child and as an adult, stay exploring, always learn, but please, please support us by attending environmental education programs and supporting education, which a lot of you already do. But that's a great way, and stay environmentally conscious in what's going on in your community and, you know, speak out about it, because it won't stay protected and won't stay healthy and wonderful with all those benefits we just talked about unless we are, as a community, protecting it.
Well, thank you both so much for joining me here today. It's been really fun to talk to you.
Thank you, Brett. This was a great time. Thank you.
Yeah, this was really fun. Thanks for having us.
My thanks to Alyssa Firkus and Jenny Sazama for speaking with me today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Would you mind rating and reviewing our podcast? You can see everything the Lake County Forest Preserves is up to at lcfpd.org. And if you're a social media fan, find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at lcfpd. Words of the Woods is written, hosted, and produced by me, Brett Pito. Thanks so much for listening. As always, take a moment, get outside, and listen to what the woods are saying in your Lake County Forest Preserves. Ah, it's that time of season 2, the end of it. I truly hope you enjoyed taking this audio journey with my colleagues and I through the Lake County Forest Preserves these past 5 weeks. I should say some of the forest preserves, because for as many stories as we've told so far between seasons 1 and 2, there are at least 100 more waiting for their turn at the mic. So what does that mean? Because of your continued support, your plays, downloads, subscriptions, and recommendations to people you know, we'll be back in 2021 with season 3. More staff, more stories, more ways we improve the quality of life in Lake County, Illinois every day. Yes, even more reasons to love your forest preserves. We're not going into total radio silence for 12 months, though. Keep your ears open for a few audio fragments between now and season 3. Until then, I'll let the woods speak for themselves. Words of the Woods is a production of the Lake County Forest Preserves in Libertyville, Illinois.